My name is Tumi Machetla. It's the 18th of September, 2009. I'm in Accra, Ghana, here with Dr. Paul Akwa, who has served two terms as the governor of the Bank of Ghana from 2001 to present. Thank you very much for joining us and being part of the Center of Interviews.
You're welcome.
Before we begin, can I just confirm that I have your consent that this is a voluntary discussion?
Yes, it is a voluntary discussion, and I'm pleased to participate.
Excellent, thank you. Can we begin with your giving me a brief overview of your career and how you came to assume the position of governor of the Bank of Ghana?
Well, I had the opportunity to work as an economist at the International Monetary Fund. I went through the ranks to become a deputy director in the fund, but mostly in that capacity responsible for Africa. So that sort of brought me into dealing with macro fiscal policy, actually economic policy in general. And I had the privilege of being invited to assume this position as governor, and that's how it began.
Yeah. When you think back to the first days in your position as governor, what were the main challenges that you regarded as the priorities of your new job?
Well, you know, I was coming into a central bank, and I had been working, as I said, in the fund, doing a lot of mission work, which means discussing programs with member countries and so on. So I had pretty good idea about what a central bank is supposed to do. So from the specific perspective of Ghana, I thought it was important really to build on the analytical capacity of the institution, build up its capacity to provide empirical data and analytical information to the public, because I knew that we wanted to move into some kind of an inflation targeting new framework. I had already discussed some of this framework in the context of our work in the fund on South Africa. So I thought it was it would be good to establish the foundations for an inflation targeting central bank, and that requires a lot of work, which means that you've got to organize, restructure the organization to adapt to the objective that you have set. So I put a lot of emphasis on staff and organizational change. In fact, very early on, I knew that I had to trim down the staff and focus in the culture of the organization on economics and economic work, because, you know, central banks in a lot of African countries had tended to develop a culture which emphasized accounting and rather than economics, let's put it that way. So I wanted to reshape, you know, the culture of the organization to make it more targeted, oriented towards economic analysis and policy making. That involved really looking at, you know, the work of the institution, and restructuring the various departments, you know, and creating pockets for analytical work. Actually, even in the research department, I created special studies section, and then created external finance division, you know, mm-hmm. to focus on relationship of the bank with external financial institutions, you know, obviously including the fund and the bank and all those institutions. But I did that by introducing competitive selection procedures, mm-hmm. which means I did not just reassign staff, but I opened up, I filled those special units with people selected on a competitive basis. Mm-hmm. So it became the centers for change, I should say. Mm-hmm. And then I should say that, you know, I came at the beginning, at the end of a very exciting election. Mm-hmm. I think there had been a change of government, you know, one that brought in a party that had been in opposition for a long time mm-hmm. To power. And for Ghana, it was the first time that one political party had given way to another political party. And mm-hmm. I think there was a general sense of maybe renewal of democracy. Mm-hmm. So it was a period of, I believe, considerable enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. You know, a surge in expectations, you know, about democracy, and the new government was talking about accountabilities, zero tolerance for corruption, strengthening democracy, you know, all those new principles that seem to galvanize, you know, new governments in power. So I found a sense of empowerment, really. You know, I found a sense of empowerment, mm-hmm. and I thought everything was possible.
Yeah,
everything was possible. And I had to sort of set a few key objectives. I remember my board was asking for a strategic, you know, a strategy plan, you know, medium-term strategy plan. Mm-hmm. And I explained to them, you know, what really I wanted to do. But I thought that this was a very old institution, you know, with established a culture. Certain principal practices had become rooted. This is a central bank, you know, which had established quite an influence, and I think a good reputation in society. It's a much revered institution as far as Ghana is concerned. Mm-hmm. So to implement change, I thought was going to be very difficult. And plans that are put on paper will still have to be implemented somehow. So I thought that the way to implement change is to introduce measures that could be explained. Let me take, for example, the one major policy measure that I introduced. That was reducing the size of the staff. Actually, today we are about 1,400. A staff of 1,400. When I came, we were about 2,500. So I decided that, one, you have to really mechanize certain procedures. For example, the currency processing system. We used to have a lot of currency counters, you know, so we mechanized the currency processing system. We mechanized it while the staff were still in place, you know. So, so it turned out at the end of the mechanization procedure that there was de facto redundancy because they saw all these machines doing the work very efficiently and smoothly. So there was a rationale for asking the staff associated with the currency processing to leave voluntarily, you know, and I think that that helped. I used that as an example, and then I said, well, you need to protect the personnel and assets of this institution. So you can see today that this bank is well secured. When you were coming in, you probably saw the procedures that you had to go through in order to get access to the bank. I think that that program, you know, was implemented both to ensure that there is security of personnel, the security of assets, and in doing so, we have been able to establish almost a new culture, you know, in the organization. I mean, the place is very calm.
What was it like before then?
Before then, there was a lot of traffic. You know, in and out of the place, and therefore a lot of distraction. Let me put it: there was a lot of distraction as well. But I see that because of that, that system of protecting assets and staff, you know, we have secured or we have really built a bank that is worthy of being called a center with the environment, you know, the environment of a central bank. And today, because of some of the computerization system that we have also introduced, we have been ISO certified. You know, I mean, this is shows that not only is our environment reasonably pleasant, you know, but that our systems are also robust and procedures and practices up to international best best practice, you know, the standards. I think that's, I'm talking about the institution now, because I think the institution itself, you know, has to be strong and disciplined in order to deliver on its mandate. Mm-hmm. So I've put a lot of emphasis on these institutional changes and the way we really do business. And I think perhaps that that's something that it's not publicized. It's not publicized because you really have to come to the central bank to see that, yes, it is a central bank, you know, both and by the way we work and the way we, I think, we project ourselves. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I came to do monetary monetary policy, you know, and the bank was, I was fortunate that the bank was empowered by the introduction of the promulgation of the Bank of Ghana Act, which actually gave an independence to the bank in the conduct of monetary policy. I think that armed me, you know, to emphasize that the mandate, the core business of the central bank has shifted. You know, it's new, and therefore we have to do work that allows us to deliver on that mandate. It means that the culture of the institution is now shifting from pure, you know, the currency operations and accounting to really monetary policy, you know. And once you are doing monetary policy, then all your internal training procedures and so on have to be managed in order to support the monetary policy functions of the bank. So when you start with from that perspective, then you say, how could monetary policy be effective? You know, so you build a lot of information and analysis and empirical work in order to communicate with the public. And this is actually strengthening the foundations for what I described as the inflation targeting regime that we have set up. That is really the normal work of the central bank. And then you say, if monetary policy is going to be the transmission be effective, there should be a framework for the transmission process to work well. And so you emphasize the development of the banking system itself, and the payment system infrastructure supporting the system. And so we promoted a spate of legislation, you know, to establish the legal and regulatory framework to support the banking system. But how do you get support for this spate of regulatory framework? I mean, spate of legislation. I think we maintain quite a close relationship with Parliament, especially the Finance Committee of Parliament. And to do that, we had to do a lot of the background work, you know, supporting the legislation. yourself, if you want to introduce anti-money laundering legislation, mm-hmm. or you want to introduce a new banking act to strengthen the regulatory powers of the bank, you have to provide that work, mm-hmm. you know, and have seminars with the Finance Committee of Parliament, because they are the ones who are really going to pass the legislation. So we did, mm-hmm. we spent a lot of time doing some of this background legislative, you know, preparatory work for Parliament. And I think that probably explains why we are able to really reform, mm-hmm. you know, the legislative and regulatory framework. And then I think in order to implement some of these reforms, you definitely need the support, mm-hmm. of the executive. You know, I think the executive gave a lot of confidence to the central bank in you know, its daily, you know, promoting all of these reforms. Mm-hmm. We acted with a full recognition that we had a lot of support.
Mm-hmm. How was that support manifest? What did that mean for you?
Well, you know, if the support comes by way of endorsement of proposals and ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, take for example the key, very major initiative, which is the redenomination. You know, we sort of knocked off four zeros from the. The arithmetic, where we set 10,000 Ghana cedis to one new Ghana city, you mm-hmm. know, while maintaining the external value unchanged. You know. This is a very major reform. There's no way you could any central bank could implement that reform without providing convincing arguments, mm-hmm. Or convincing rationale to the executives, you know. I mean, any other fiscal authorities, if you can put it that way. Mm-hmm. Because, so if if the executive did not have confidence that one, maybe your argument is sound, mm-hmm. and two, that you have the capacity to do it, I think some people call it the law of unintended effects, would really prevent the central bank, I mean, prevent the executive from giving an endorsement, because mm-hmm. it has political and other implications. So I think the central bank had to demonstrate a certain degree of credibility in its ability, mm-hmm. to implement such, you know, such measures. And I think because we had delivered successively on a number of key issues, we were able to get that endorsement, you know, to do it. But that is to say that even though the central bank has statutory independence, there is need for consultations, you know, and communication with other stakeholders, both with the parliamentarians and with the executive, the government, you know. But as far as I've not mentioned the public, but the public consultation with the public or communication with the public has been key. And I think by the medium of our monetary policy process, whereby we really provide a lot of information, I think, over the last 8 years, we provided a lot of information to the public on the economy, to the public, both in terms of written, published information, and in exposing ourselves to press, you know, questions almost every two months. So I think that channel of communication also has been there. But more importantly, I think that communication has been useful because we've been able to deliver on the policy of engineering, you know, macro stability. Because we started with a very high inflation, in a very high inflation environment. We made it known that our focus would be on price stability, you know, derived from that new mandate given to us by the Bank of Ghana Act. And I think from 2002 to 2006, you could see very steady disinflation, you know, taking place, and relative stability in prices and the exchange market. So I think to some extent, it must have reassured the public that the central bank perhaps knew what it was doing, you know, knew what it was doing, which means that we were beginning to be heard. So, and so when we introduced a new measure, perhaps the public considered it credible, you know, and that made it. I think that has made it possible for the bank to sort of, you know, evolve and grow into an effective institution.
Did you see your engagement with the public primarily focused on giving them information that was important regarding, you know, say, the economy indicators? Or would you say that you were also attempting to build popular support? Was that something you were concerned about? Or was it more about just ensuring that they had relevant information on the bank's activities?
I think we built popular support by the force of our communication. I tell you why. This is a very open, you know, society. We have you probably have found out that you have so many radio stations. There's a lot of discussion, mm-hmm. you know, in public, a lot of public discussion on things that are very important and things that are very trivial. Mm-hmm. You know. So, personally, I thought that the framework, you know, offered both opportunity and also risks. The opportunity is that the public is tuned in, you know, and therefore you could get public attention anytime you wanted. Okay. The risk is that there's so much going on that the central bank's voice could be drowned in the noise, mm-hmm. which meant that the communication had to be strategic. Mm-hmm. You know, it had to be strategic, so that when the bank enters the domain, you know, people listen. Mm-hmm. I think with that consideration in mind, we have not been over present, let me put it that way, you know, that you go everywhere, you see the bank, mm-hmm. you know. We've been quite strategic in making interventions. And I think, I mean, that's my view, that people might say that this governor does not like to talk mm-hmm. too much, you know. But I consider this really a strategic approach to communicating with the public. Because otherwise, you know, you could go anywhere, you are in the noise. So the strategy was to create a lot of premium on the message that the central bank has to communicate with the public. And I think this is how we managed our relationship with the public.
Mm-hmm. Talking of sort of popular perceptions, I'd like to ask how you managed the initial reforms that you described of reducing the staff size and focusing it on its analytic capacity. Many people have said to me that it's difficult to dismiss people in the Ghanaian context, that it's quite a difficult thing to do. Was that something you found? Were there any challenges? Did you have to talk to associations for employees? Can you describe that process, please?
No, it was difficult. But first of all, we looked at the age distribution of the staff. This is an old institution, you know. Mm-hmm. We just celebrated our 50th last year, mm-hmm. or 2 years ago, mm-hmm. our 50th anniversary. Some people have been with the bank for a very, very long time. Okay. So you look at the age distribution of the staff. Mm-hmm. And you see that maybe some of them are very close to retirement, and therefore a voluntary retirement program might be attractive depending upon the nature of the package. Then you undertake this analysis and explain to the staff that our mandate has changed. Mm-hmm. You know, our mandate has changed. And in the context of this core mandate, there are certain things that we cannot afford to continue to do. You know, and there are certain activities we have to be de-emphasized. Mm-hmm. And some will have to be done more efficiently. You know? For example, the currency printing and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So the debate, actually, the discussion centered on the new mandate of the central bank.
Okay.
Obviously, it still generated a lot of discussion,
mm-hmm.
Including even I think there was a couple of strikes, demonstration, not strike, but very staff, I mean very adverse staff reaction.
Mm-hmm.
The Labour Commission came in. You can see Vodafone is trying to do something. The Labour Commission came in. So we went to the public, you know, mm-hmm. to explain why there was need for voluntary retirement or program,
mm-hmm.
you know. We call it the reshape.
Mm-hmm.
It was a reshape program. We were trying to reshape the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't call it redundancy or anything.
Yeah.
We were trying to reshape the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we went to the public to say, we have a new core mandate. This is how we intend to approach it. And our new mandate makes it important, essential for us to look at the structure of the staff, reorganize it,
mm-hmm.
so that we can better focus on it. And when our statement was printed in the papers, we got a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got a lot of support. And of course, I had just come, relatively.
Yeah.
So there was an implicit support for the new governor to do his work,
okay.
You see, and I think that that happened. So it was a lot of discussion inside, certainly a lot of resistance. And as I said, there are certain activities that had already become redundant,
mm-hmm.
you see, because when the reshape actually was being implemented, some of these activities were already redundant, and nobody told the staff that you should not come to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they came. And so it required a lot of discussion. I wouldn't say that it was smooth,
mm-hmm.
Because there was a lot of resistance. In fact, we were taken to court.
Mm-hmm.
Just as in our case, the bank was taken to court to challenge the voluntary departure program.
Was this by individuals or by a group of employees?
I think it was by the group. Yeah.
Okay.
You know. So.
What was the outcome of that case?
The outcome was. We won ultimately, but mm-hmm. fortunately, the court did not stay the exercise,
mm-hmm.
you know, pending adjudication.
Okay.
So we were able to go along with the process whilst the court case was being handled, because the issue is whether a voluntary redundancy on that scale,
mm-hmm.
is a redundancy.
Yeah.
You see, voluntary departure program on that scale was a redundancy or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a redundancy, then you're subject to the negotiations and discussions with the unions and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And we had taken the position that the labor law allowed voluntary departure program,
mm-hmm.
you know, without renegotiation, provided, of course, that not provided, but one had to ensure that the packages supporting the redundancy program were attractive enough for it to be successful. Mm-hmm. And I think it was attractive enough because we got a few, a number of people to participate in the redundancy program.
And you had sufficient funds within your budget?
Yes,
to cover
because
that.
we had budgeted for it.
Okay. I'd also like to ask you, as we begin to wrap up, about, you know, you described this process of reshaping also involving attracting new skills to the bank. And I'd like to ask whether you faced any challenges in doing that, and also if you worked with a core team, say senior level, to help you, to assist your work in taking some of these reforms forward.
I had first of all, I have extraordinary support from the board. Mm-hmm. I mean, the board was an enthusiastic board, you know. Very distinguished group of people who had excelled in their own professions. So they had a very understanding and cooperative board. So I had board support for all the way. Very strong board support. To the point that if I wanted an emergency meeting with on short order, you know, I was almost certain to get all of them, provided they are in town. Mm-hmm. So that's how supportive and cooperative they were. In order to obviously you have to work with the heads of department very closely. I have tried to work with the heads of departments, you know, very closely. I have tended to use task forces to implement, you know, policies. Mm-hmm. We set up a task force consisting of experienced, very good staff to address particular issues. So with recruitment, for example, we set up a panel, you know, to actually do the recruitment, interview prospective staff members, economists in this case, for recruitment, you know. So I mean, but since we were thinking of raising the qualifications, entry qualifications, and so we started sort of tapping the young MSc MA graduates from the local universities, you know, Legon Department of Economics, and so I mean, we have some very sharp people, you know, graduating from the various universities. So we go there to recruit from the top, and also began to open up a recruitment process to the external. You know, external residents, by advertising, for example, in the Economist, and so on. Okay. And through that process, we were able to get one or two, which was an encouragement because, you know, it's not easy to attract non-resident Ghanaians, you know, back to the local market.
How do you think you were able to attract them?
Well, I think they must have followed what we are trying to do. Mm-hmm. I think they must have followed what we are trying to do. Because we built quite a good website, you know, that provided a lot of information on the Bank of Ghana and its activities. Mr. Dr. Okwafare was once a graduate student. Where is it? Nottingham University, and he was following. He was following our website, very, very closely. So, yes, we were able to attract a couple of people. But since we had downsized, we became very selective in the recruitment process. First for the technical skills that we needed, and as we were moving towards major computerization of the bank, move towards the IT, people with IT skills. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think one wholesale recruitment that we did was regard to the IT personnel, mm-hmm. Because we have integrated this system, really major, highly integrated solution that we now operate at a bank. Mm-hmm. So we needed people with IT skills, to come and help implement. And I think that we brought almost about six or so. That's a major recruitment as far as, mm-hmm. as I'm concerned. So yes, you had to work with special task forces to focus on particular measures. But I must add that the bank has put a lot of emphasis on training. Mm-hmm. Both local training and training abroad, which means sending staff to courses and programs abroad. We have a very good training budget. Mm-hmm. And we make sure that people get exposed, to some of these programs. Mm-hmm. In other countries. Certainly, most of the financial analysis courses provided by the Fund and the World Bank and, mm-hmm. and Bank of England and so on, we try to participate. Mm-hmm. But we have shifted towards giving more of that training within the bank, in our own training institute. Actually, just last year, I established a center for professional training and development.
In the bank?
In the bank. Mm-hmm. The bank has always had a training school, but we sort of modernized mm-hmm. the center and shifted its focus, mm-hmm. So that in terms of content, you get something akin to what you would obtain in various courses, abroad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As we found out that, at least I believe that it is better to bring one or two experts to deliver the courses here for the benefit of a greater number of people, mm-hmm. than to send one or two bright staff members out there and try to come back and impart mm-hmm. the knowledge to their colleagues. I don't know how much retention is there, but even if they are able to absorb 110%, they might not be able to diffuse, mm-hmm. More than 60% to their colleagues. So the center is saying that, well, we can get facilitators, to come and provide training on special courses to the staff.
Mm-hmm. That's all very interesting. This program is designed to help other people engaged in reform learn from the lessons of people such as yourself about the challenges that they faced in developing institutions. Is there anything you'd like to add that you think we've missed in that context?
Frankly, when I reflect on, you know, the strategy for change, I probably would say that my strategy has been one that has been dependent on activities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm saying that because you will not find in this building the governor's strategy for change,
mm-hmm,
in one book. You will not going to find this strategy. The approach has been that you have an objective. What activity do you have to implement, you know, to achieve that objective or get reinforcing impact,
mm-hmm,
that will allow you to achieve that objective. So, as I said, if I had perhaps written that I wanted an institution, a very slim institution with a staff of not more than 1,000, a building with very, you know, access where access is limited and difficult. Assets of the institution are protected, a central bank that can announce to the public interest rate decisions with credibility and all that, you know,
mm-hmm,
it would have been difficult to do. Because why? Because I think it's a system of stakeholder relationships, you know. So I tended to emphasize on the positive aspect and rationale of a policy measure.
Mm-hmm.
And take the and I guess my first thing was to erect this wall that you see there, or this wall around there, and then introduce the access,
mm-hmm,
system. I mean, the objective was to really protect the assets of the bank, to protect the staff. But it also addressed the problem of nuisance, you know, in terms of strangers coming in, loitering around, and so on. I could have said that I don't want any strangers here,
mm-hmm,
you see what I mean? I don't want loitering in this bank. But I say, look, I think we have to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're introducing a measure to protect the staff and the assets of the bank, it will be very difficult to oppose it. You see,
mm-hmm,
but I think it also addressed the issue of, as I say, nuisance, loitering, either by staff or by strangers on the premises, you know, exposing ourselves and so on and so forth. But you are not going to see that in a written a written policy, mm-hmm. an overall policy or strategy. And maybe I should say that to some extent I may have been influenced, I think in retrospect, by the way the fund does business, because I worked at the fund for a long time. I really never saw a strategy for, a written strategy for developing or adaptation. You know, it was very recent that the fund was working on strategy for reform. Mm-hmm. But the fund as an organization has been evolving on the basis of, you know, policies that are tailored towards achieving specific objectives. Mm-hmm. And I think with that type of approach, you see an objective, you set an objective, and as I said, you establish a way to achieve it. And the task force system, you know, has actually, I believe, worked for me. Because if you talk about the payment system reforms, the latest measure that we introduced, you know, we call it eSwitch. This is biometric smart card common platform for the banks. Mm-hmm. You know, we thought that, well, it would be good to achieve promote financial inclusion. So we set up a task force to try to implement this biometric smart card system. And it has been done successfully. You are not going to see in our literature, mm-hmm. At the bank, that the governor said, one, there's an objective to achieve financial inclusion. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we have to implement the eSwitch, you know, biometric platform. But I think you sort of develop policies to adapt to and also influence the direction, you know, of growth of the organization. I think this is probably the advantage is that you deal with stakeholder resistance, you know, in specific context, mm-hmm. you see, because I mean, if I'm going to introduce a biometric smart card and so on and so forth, what kind of resistance do I have to deal with? I have to deal with the inertia of the banking system, because the banks themselves may want to introduce their own products, mm-hmm. you know, but. The products will not serve the public good interest that, you know, the central bank wants to promote. So if I can defend this public good, mm-hmm. product that we are introducing, then I have one battle, you know. I mean, it's really focused strategic battle with the banking system, how you get them to cooperate. But imagine if I put all these things together and I'm fighting the banks on, mm-hmm. smart card, I'm fighting the staff on redundancy, I'm fighting this on that, and I'm fighting, you know, and I'm fighting the public or the business sector on interest rate decisions. You know, you have a serious problem. So in a sense, perhaps what I'm saying is that I use policy actions as an instrument, you know, at a time, you know, one instrument to achieve one objective, instead of putting all sort of objectives in a bowl and trying to devise various instruments to achieve them. You know, maybe they may even be mistargeted.
Just quickly, given the importance of task force to this strategic approach, how were they constituted? Were they people in the bank, or did they have stakeholder representation?
No, mostly when it centered on central bank activity, mostly people in the bank. But when it had other stakeholder implications, we brought people from outside the bank. For example, the eSwitch platform, we brought people from outside the bank as part of the task force to first of all identify the type of, you know, the whole procurement identification and procurement process. We brought people from outside the bank. And then you have to do the education or the communication with the banks directly, you know, through a series of meetings, you know, why you want to introduce it and the type of support that you want. But in the case of the redenomination, which is affected the wider society, you know, we brought people from outside, you know, I mean, because, you know, currency operation is has a lot of security dimensions, you know, so we brought everybody, you know, from the security services, individuals, you know, representing. I'm not sure that I think they represented them, but we brought really experts, you know, to be part of the logistic team. And public education, we brought people, Ministry of Communication, and the civil society, and so on, you know, as part. And we sort of took responsibility for the training to give focus to the activity and their participation. So it depends upon the activity.
And did you set their mandate, and did they report back to you, these task forces?
They reported directly to the bank.
To the board or to?
To the board also, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for your time. This has been a very interesting discussion.
Thank you very much.